This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 253 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Alpharetta, Georgia.
That's a long ways from home, David.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately on a business trip, so I'm broadcasting from the beautiful Hyatt Place in downtown Alpharetta, Georgia. Very pretty area, but I'm looking forward to, after being here a week, to go home and sleep in my own bed and podcast from my living room again, not hotel rooms.
Yes.
So, Max, we got a lot of good news this week. We've got pseudosatellites, an agricultural drone that sprays crops, a project looking at drone applications in cities, the FAA makes a preemption statement, a payment concept for drone package delivery. We hadn't talked about that one yet. And a deformable drone that absorbs impacts. It's kind of the way I felt like after a 4 o'clock start on Monday. I felt like a deformable drone that needed to absorb impact in my bedroom, in my bed. So I guess we should get started. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, let's get started, David.
Well, our first story comes from machinedesign.com. Prototype solar-powered high-altitude UAV undergoing flight tests. UAVOS Incorporated has got a HAPS high-altitude pseudo-satellite aircraft that they're just starting to fly.
Like many of these other proposals or concepts that we've seen, or even test flights, this is solar-powered, very lightweight-looking aircraft. This one is kind of interesting in that it's got a flexible wing. UAVOS says control of roll, pitch, V-shape, and slip occurs due to a controlled change in the angle of attack in particular sections of wings. Now, they have an autopilot that they've developed, and they say it, quote, controls the flexible wing by analyzing the extended aspect ratio of the wing's deformation and adjusting the lift quickly. So kind of an interesting design. They have been testing this, actually, or at least a scaled-down prototype.
Wing warping. It's old-fashioned wing warping.
Yeah, huh?
And how old-fashioned is wing warping? How about 1903 Wright Flyer Ones wing warping? But that's pretty cool. What's old is new again. We've discovered that a lot. Total flight time so far has been more than 1,000 hours, with altitudes up to 20,000 meters, or that would be 65,617 feet. So they are running this seriously through tests.
Yeah, and so far they've confirmed that this aircraft does all right with turbulence up there by actively changing the bend of the wing. This prototype is got a 14-meter wingspan, about 46 feet, very lightweight, as you might guess, 15 kilograms or 33 pounds, carbon fiber airframe. The full-scale model is a little bit bigger. They're expecting that would be about 23 kilograms, but still, that's only 51 pounds, roughly. They're also looking at the solar cell technology. Right now, they're getting an efficiency from the solar cells of about 20%, they say, but they are looking at some better solar panels in the future.
And UAVOS Incorporated, and we'll have a link in the show notes, says they specialize in the design, development, and manufacturing of unmanned vehicles and autopilot systems and components. The solutions range from small industrial surveillance drones to large UAVs. So I guess this sort of falls in the middle range there.
Hmm.
What do you think, Max?
Yeah, the one that they're testing, the Apis Duo, is planned for a number of possible missions. I mean, we've talked about pseudo-satellites and providing internet connectivity, but they also look towards video surveillance and monitoring, frequency jamming, radio link range extension and retransmission, also using it as a research and development flying laboratory for somewhat maybe socially more attractive, if you will, applications like meteorology and hydrology, earth monitoring, things like that. So a number of possible applications for that. But David, we do see, you know, several organizations developing these kinds of pseudo-satellites. It'll be interesting to see who actually comes to market with an aircraft.
Yeah, and the HAPS mission is definitely a UAS mission. You're not going to get a manned aircraft to fly long endurance missions at high altitudes, even though we have things like U-2s. But being able to keep things up for 24, 48, or even longer hours makes for a very efficient and platform. I kind of like the R&D flying laboratory mission where, you know, you could talk about sampling either meteorology or hydrology, earth monitoring, or even radiation emissions. You know, if so, you've got a combination of emissions where it can be a military aspect or a civilian aspect. So we'll follow up with that. Again, it's definitely a UAV specific mission. That these high altitude pseudo satellites, you know, we used to call them dirigibles, but now we've got manned aircraft. Hopefully they get their solar cell efficiency up higher. 20% doesn't seem very effective. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, even the highest efficiency solar cells, I believe, are not all that impressive. At least, I don't think they approach 100% or even above 75%. I think they're on the low end of the scale, but maybe that's something that we can look into a little bit. But David, I think our next story kind of brings us back down to earth.
And it does. And this is from thedrive.com, one of our favorite websites. North Dakota State University's herbicide spraying drone covers 33 acres an hour. The university's Agriculture and Biosystems Engineering Department bought a Ag V6 Plus agricultural drone from Homeland Surveillance and Electronics, and it cost $18,000, including the training to fly it.
And this drone holds about 4 gallons of herbicide. It flies autonomously for about 30 minutes, and in two flights, or in an hour, like you said, David, it can cover 33 acres. Now, this is part of the department's Smart Farm project. They call it Smart Farm. And what they're trying to do here is they want to be able to deploy the drone in a precise area of the crops and fly it autonomously without the need for a high-resolution imaging drone. I guess kind of an all-in-one sort of approach. And they have some testing scheduled. This is almost the end of July, isn't it, David? So in August, they intend to conduct some testing of this.
Yeah, and it's going to be a visual line of sight. They're going to dump dye over paper. So they'll measure the accuracy, coverage, and application rate. So where you have a normal crop dusting aircraft or a helicopter, in this case, you might need only one specific area of your crops that need to have the herbicide and not dust the whole field. So you can target. Again, this goes back to all these years we've been talking about precision agriculture, making specific areas grow better or tracking them. So you've got basically a combination aircraft that can deploy the herbicide, or I guess fertilizer, as well as analyze the specific areas that need to be addressed.
And this company that supplied this this particular drone, Homeland Surveillance and Electronics, they have a really wide spectrum of products on the maybe the big end of the scale. They produce the Hercules Heavy Lift UAV. It's a big, big multi-rotor that can carry a payload of 44 pounds for a 60-minute flight time. But they also have a Delta fixed-wing drone, the FW-70. They also have what they call the 914 Rotax Turbo, which is a helicopter that can either be flown unmanned or manned, one operator or one pilot, and a number of others, as well as this AGVA or AGVA fully autonomous UAV sprayer. Now, we found a promotional video for this UAV crop sprayer, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can get a better idea of just what this thing looks like and how it operates and what some of the features are.
Very cool. But let's hop the pond, shall we? I guess if we're starting in North Dakota, we would be going across the pole to the United Kingdom. This was from DroneLife.com. In the UK, has a golden opportunity to shape the future of drones. In the UK, the Nesta Innovation Foundation conducted a pilot project called the Flying High Challenge, and it started back in December 2017. Looking for applications for drones in cities.
Yeah, very interesting because oftentimes, well, cities are the big challenge when it comes to unmanned aircraft. And frequently we see people focusing their development efforts in other areas that are less populated and represent less risk in many ways. But the opposite is true here. Nesta says, quote, the Flying High Project will position the UK to become a global leader in shaping drone systems that place people's needs first. And they have several objectives that they're trying to reach. They want to shape city plans on the future of drones in UK cities. They want to identify and address key complexities such as technology, infrastructure, law regulations, safety, and privacy. All right, that's a list that we can all probably recite off the top of our head. And the third objective area is to create detailed technical and economic plans that they say unlock market opportunity through regulatory test beds, open innovation technology challenges, and live real-world demonstrations.
And from those challenges, they've got four key themes. Technology that allows the drones to perform critical services in everyday city life. Cities and people must be at the center of shaping potential uses for drones and how they may integrate sustainably into communities. Potential impact of drone systems on advancing cities' social, economic, transport, and environmental and innovation plans. And integrating drone systems sustainably and safely within cities. So they're really trying to focus in on getting, I don't want to say just drone delivery, but getting these integrated into an urban environment. And there's a lot of challenges with that.
And there's some great examples from some of the activities that this project has already been engaged in. They've collaborated with five cities. And so far, they've looked at medical delivery within London. They've looked at traffic incident response in the West Midlands, fire response in Bradford, construction and regeneration in Preston, and also medical delivery across the Solent to the Isle of Wight.
And the Drone Life also identified six key findings. The UK cities are open to exploring the potential of drone technology, which is, that's good news that we're not trying to shut off cities. Public engagement is the key to keeping people on side, safety and privacy. And I think we can attest that, you know, changing people's attitudes towards UAVs has been important. One of the reasons why we've done this show. Unless drones can operate safely in a complex environment at scale, their impact will be surely limited. And that makes sense. You want to be able to scale up these things. And if these kind of delivery systems, et cetera, if they're not going to be scalable, you're going to get basically a dead end. So public confidence is key. So initial operations should focus on the social good. And an understatement. There are technical and regulatory hurdles to overcome. Yeah, it always seems to be that's always the bottom line for everything anymore, isn't it, Max?
Yeah, it sure is. And I think originally, or if you go back several years, it'd be easy to say that maybe the technical challenges were just as daunting as the regulatory challenges. But I don't know, these days, maybe it's the same, but it just feels like the technology has come a long ways. And the regulatory situation has come along, but maybe not to the same extent. I don't know. That's kind of the sense I get. What do you think about that, David?
I think there's an ebb and flow, Max. I think technology gets advanced, and then it looks like regulation starts getting caught up, and then there's a breakthrough or something, and the technology leaps out in front again. So truly, the regulation is trying to catch up to the technology, and luckily, at least in most situations, the regulations isn't stifling the technology, which could be a really big issue should that ever occur. That basically, innovation and technology are being inhibited by the regulation. I know some people would argue that's already happening, but I still think that. I'll be positive about it and say that it's not hindering that much.
And we'll have a link to the final report in the show notes. You can take a look at that. It's Flying High, the Future of Drone Technology in UK Cities. It makes for some, actually, it's pretty interesting reading. So find that in the show notes.
Speaking of regulation, the FAA clarifies federal authority over drone rulemaking. This is from unmannedaerial.com. Some states and local governments have passed laws that regulate drones. Who has the authority over the airspace, and does federal preemption apply? Well, Max, sooner or later it was going to come to this. And the answer is...
The FAA says in their press release, quote, Congress has provided the FAA with exclusive authority to regulate aviation safety, the efficiency of the navigable airspace, and air traffic control, among other things. State and local governments are not permitted to regulate any type of aircraft operations, such as flight paths or altitudes, or the navigable airspace. But there is a kind of a caveat here.
The but is local governments can control landing sites through their land use powers. So you might be able to fly over the town, but you might not be able to land there.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept that probably isn't as exploited by cities, towns, local governments that really seek to regulate unmanned aircraft. But the FAA, they're pretty explicit, though. They say cities and municipalities are not permitted to have their own rules or regulations governing the operation of aircraft.
So you can fly it over your neighbor's yard, but you might not be able to land it there. So I still think, Max, we're going to have some legal wrangling before all of this argument is done.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think the FAA statement here, while it may influence lawmakers at the state and local level, I think a number of them will choose to proceed with their own drone laws and regulations and so forth. So, yeah, I think that this is going to continue to be an issue.
And we have another story from thedrive.com. WorldPay's drone delivery mat identifies customer before releasing package. Now, I have to admit, when this came up, Max, and I read it, hadn't thought about this because we're so used to buying things in advance and having it shipped via the Amazon method. But what happens if you want your drone delivery, but you need to pay?
Consumers only want to pay if they, in fact, get the package. And this is even an issue, at least in the United States, with the, you mentioned the Amazon kind, with, you know, delivery by some service onto your front porch or to your door. And a significant number of those packages get taken by others. So when we have deliveries by drone, you still have that issue. And of course, the sellers of products, they want to be sure that if the drone drops off the package, that they get paid. So the company is WorldPay, and they are a payments processing company. And they have an idea as to how to deal with this. And it's basically pretty simple. Customers would get a portable landing pad of some sort that's actually tied to their credit card. So as the delivery drone comes along, it sees the pad, lands on the pad. That lets the drone confirm that it's at the right place. Then the next step is that payment is authorized, and meaning against your credit card. And when that's accomplished, then the package is released and the drone flies away. So it's a pretty simple idea. But like you say, David, it's an aspect of this that we haven't really thought about. I mean, it seems like Amazon is thinking about, you know, every single aspect of this whole kind of process. And that's why we see all those patents coming from Amazon. But this payment part of the process, maybe in some ways, is one of the more important parts.
Yeah, and the DronePay proof of concept uses EMV, contactless payment card technology embedded into the drone landing pad. EMV stands for EuroPay, MasterCard, or Visa, and is a global standard for credit and debit cards that use computer chips to authenticate and secure chip card transactions. So now we, you know, you have to insert your card, which primarily Europeans and Canadians and the rest of the world have been doing, and only recently here in the United States we've been doing. But it's a secure technology. So my only problem with this is your portable landing pad might violate your local laws. So your drone will be able to fly there, but it won't be able to land at your backyard on your landing pad. How's that for dovetailing in the last two stories?
Yeah, I hadn't drawn that line, David. That's pretty good. There is a video from WorldPay. We'll have a link in the show notes. It's a demonstration video, but it shows this concept in action. So there's another video in our show notes.
So last story is from the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. An insect-inspired drone deforms upon impact. And this is from actu.epfl.ch. And the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne developed a drone inspired by insect wings that deforms on impact.
This thing kind of takes some inspiration from origami. But they say that there really are two kinds of structures, origami-inspired structures, that are out there. There are rigid structures, and they have a certain weight-bearing capacity, but they break if that capacity is exceeded. And there are flexible structures that are resilient, but they can't carry much of a load. So what EPFL has done here is developed a hybrid origami drone, they're calling it. It can be stiff or flexible depending on the circumstances.
The structure is stiff when airborne, and if the drone runs into something, it becomes flexible and absorbs the shock. It uses a sandwich structure of stiff and elastic layers. And we have a video, another video of this, watching it hit a wall, and it's a crumple zone drone, Max. What do you think?
Yeah, the arms of the drone are, again, rigid enough to, you know, hold the motors and the props and all of that. But when the drone hits an object or strikes something, then those arms can twist and fold and absorb the impact. Now, this is a pretty small drone. I don't know, David. It looks like something maybe you could hold in your hand, that kind of size.
Like an insect size, like a dragonfly. It's a large insect, but not much bigger than that.
Yeah, but it's an interesting idea. I don't know how scalable it is. So if you talk about a drone that's somewhat larger, heavier, carrying a camera, that sort of a thing, I'm curious to know, you know, if that technology that they develop scales up in size. But it's an interesting start to an interesting concept.
And we like the fact that all of this stuff comes out and is different and new. So another exploration, it might not pan out to anything, but it's an interesting intellectual study. So last but not least, Max, I think we got some feedback. And this was from Scott. We talked last week about the Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Procurement Guide and an upcoming webinar. We now have details about that webinar, and that will be August 1st at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time here in the States. And there'll be a link to the webinar invitation for the Payload Delivery Working Group in our show notes.
That's right. And it's open to anyone who would like to attend. And again, this is this new UAV procurement guide that was developed by USAID Global Health Supply Chain Program, the Procurement and Supply Management Project. But they say, and just to reiterate what we said last week, the purpose of this guide is to share lessons and insights from the experience of that project to help other organizations that are undertaking similar efforts. And the idea is this guide would prevent others from reinventing the wheel or starting from ground zero, and to expedite the rate at which this technology is applied and scaled up. So thanks to Scott for passing that along. August 1st, 2018, 10 a.m. Eastern, coming up fast. That's GMT-4. But the link in the show notes will tell you all about this webinar.
So, Max, I think it's time for me to go to bed. I have to be up early tomorrow, and I've got a long day ahead of traveling tomorrow. So I think we probably should wrap this one up. What do you think?
Let's do that. We want to thank you for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 253. Find us at theuavdigest.com. There you'll find show notes for each episode. Look for the show notes here at some of the videos. We have a number of videos this time. We have that promotional video of the Homeland Surveillance and Electronics drone, the one that's being used by North Dakota State University. We have the demonstration video from WorldPay of their drone pay concept. And we have a video of that insect-inspired drone that deforms on impact. So you'll find all of those in the show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/253.
And of course, you can find us on social media. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook, facebook.com/theuavdigest. You can find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher.com. And when you're there, if you really like the show, we'd love for you to tell your friends. And the best way to do that would be leave a review on one of those three sites, however you listen to the show. You can also purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. And so I guess with that, Max, oh, and of course, we want you to join our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. And you can get the ins and the outs and the behind the scenes of the show with all of our in-depth listeners on our Slack listener team. So I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Alpharetta.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.